Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Greg Jarrett.
I'm Sandra Smith.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Neither side of the political aisle was thrilled with the special counsel who decided against charging the president in his own classified documents case. Robert Hur appeared before Congress.
To listen to her and listen to the Democrats, you would think that anyone who cooperates doesn't get charged. And, like, that's never how it works.
I'm Dave Anthony. Boeing has even more questions to answer about manufacturing and airplane safety.
It's a giant issue for aviation right now. Remember, these failed audits also reflect on the FAA.
And I'm former Vice President Mike Pence. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Special Counsel Robert Hur said even if there weren't a policy against charging sitting presidents, he still would not have charged President Biden. That even if his investigation found the president willfully retained classified documents, he doubted they could prove that to a jury. In his report, Robert Hur wrote that the president comes across as a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. But to the House Judiciary Committee, he said,
"The need to show my work was especially strong here. The attorney general had appointed me to investigate the actions of the attorney general's boss, the sitting president of the United States. I knew that for my decision to be credible, I could not simply announce that I recommended no criminal charges and leave it at that. I needed to explain why."
Democrats like California Congressman Ted Lieu noted that Hur's own report compared President Biden's document case to former President Trump's.
Did you find that President Biden directed his lawyer to destroy classified documents?
No.
Did you find that President Biden directed his personal assistant to move boxes of documents to hide them from the FBI?
No.
Just a couple of things former President Trump is accused of doing. Ranking Member Maryland Democratic Congressman Jamie Raskin addressed the portion of Hur's assessment that the president came across as an older man with a poor memory who couldn't recall specific dates.
Whose soaring oratory, powerful historical analysis, and devastating extemporaneous repartee with even the most skilled ninja hecklers of the Freedom Caucus were on full display at the State of the Union address last week for the whole country to see.
But some Republicans, like California Congressman Tom McClintock, expressed concerns, again, of a double standard.
But the fact that the only person being prosecuted for this offense happens to be the president's political opponent makes this an unprecedented assault on our democracy.
At one point, a Democratic congresswoman insisted that what Hur's report did was exonerate President Biden. Hur said that's not what he did. At another point, a Democratic congressman tried to get Hur to pledge that he wouldn't take a position as judge if former President Trump wins in November. Trump initially appointed Hur as U.S. attorney, but Hur was appointed special counsel in this matter by Attorney General Merrick Garland.
He was a very good witness, and he understood that he was there to testify about his report. He resisted any temptation to do anything else.
Andy McCarthy is a Fox News contributor and former federal prosecutor.
I think the two takeaways I have are really what I thought going in, and I'm just more confirmed in it. One is the case for not charging Biden when Trump has been charged, and that's an inevitable comparison. It's the reason why he addressed it in his report. But the case for that is very weak because he, as you saw with her, Biden has a 40-year history of pilfering classified information and illegally retaining it. And what Hur would do is go through like each individual instance and come up with reasons why a jury might not think that Biden should be convicted on the basis of this or that instance. And the way trials work is actually the opposite of that. Defense lawyers do try to parse events, but what judges tell juries at the end, aside from the fact that they shouldn't check their common sense at the door when they walk in the courtroom, is that you look at evidence and pieces of evidence in conjunction, not in isolation. And what you get when you look at this in conjunction is a 40-year pattern of intentionally, willfully retaining illegally classified documents. And I thought it was very telling on that score that Herr was asked, could a rational juror convict Biden? And he answered, yes, a rational juror could. The reason that's important is on appeal, when somebody gets convicted, the standard in federal law is whether a rational juror could have found guilt beyond a reasonable doubt based on the evidence that was presented. So even the special counsel who decided not to charge is admitting that there's a prosecutable case there that a rational juror could convict on. And I think the second point is this is why he has to keep falling back on the one distinction between the Biden case and the Trump case, which is that Biden cooperated with the investigation and Trump allegedly obstructed it. But that's a reason to prosecute Trump for obstruction.
So Special Counsel Herr writes in the report, and he's questioned about this by Republicans, about that there's insufficient evidence to move forward with the prosecution against President Biden. And Herr references that he's making this decision in accordance with the justice manual, that they have to decline prosecution. What is the reference to the justice manual? I mean, it almost sounded like he was putting the burden on the Department of Justice protocol.
The thing is that the Justice Department's principles of federal prosecution are so broadly stated that he could just as easily have said, we decided to bring charges because it was consistent with the principles of federal prosecution. You know, the fact of the matter is some cases are what you call gray area cases. I must say, listening to his testimony throughout the day, this didn't seem like much of a gray area to me. It seemed to me like there's an overwhelming case for charging. In fact, I think the one reason I could think of for not charging, which is one that he's not really allowed to say, is that, you know, we're talking about a Washington, D.C. jury, which is, you know, leans heavily toward Democrats and might acquit him even if he was guilty. That's like, you know, the dirty little secret everyone knows, but it would have been inappropriate for him to say that, but don't think they weren't thinking it. And if he,
but Andy, in this case, a president, you don't charge a sitting president, right? So, I mean, and he said, go ahead.
I was going to say, functionally, you're entirely right. Technically, the Justice Department guidance says you can't prosecute or you can't indict a sitting president. Functionally, what he means is, you know, recommend charges as opposed to file charges. We could get into this if you want. I've always thought that rule that you can't indict a sitting president is wrong. I think that you should be able to indict a sitting president and keep it under seal until he's out of office. Mm. And the reason I say that is the rule is not intended to give the president a leg up that the normal person wouldn't have. But if they follow it to a letter like that, then the statute of limitations could run by the time the guy got out of office and you'd never be able to charge him. So that's never made any sense to me either.
Some Democrats, you know, said that he trashed President Biden and mocked him by mentioning his age or that he came across as, you know, seemingly old and with a poor memory. But that did not seem to be the big focus of Democrats. It seemed that the Democrats really wanted to focus on comparing this case to former President Trump, insisting that these two cases really aren't comparable. But it seemed that the Democrats largely stayed away from talking about that characterization of the president.
Yeah. See, the thing is, what is the old Mike Tyson line that like everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth? You know? The thing is, you can have a plan when you go into a hearing and say, this is what we're going to exploit, right? And then you run into a witness like Herr. And I think that, you know, the one thing that we can conclusively say after 5 hours of watching him testify is he seems to be a straight arrow and a gentleman. And it's like inconceivable to think that he would be there gratuitously poking fun at Biden. So once it's clear that that's the kind of a witness that you're dealing with, if you try to run that story when it like obviously doesn't make sense, given the witness that you're dealing with, you're going to make a fool out of yourself. And I think that they realized early on that line of argument was not going to get traction with this particular witness who just doesn't seem like the type to be gratuitously making fun of people. And then the other unfortunate thing for Democrats, facts can be very unfortunate, but they put out the transcript of Biden's interview by Herr right before the hearing, and they obviously did it right before the hearing because they didn't want to give the Republicans time to prepare because it's a gold mine for them. But it made it very obvious that a lot of the things that Biden accused her of weren't true. You know, like her didn't bring up Bo Biden. It was Biden who brought it up. You know, her was utterly respectful to Biden during the course of the interview. You weren't going to get any place by suggesting that this guy was a gratuitously nasty partisan kind of guy. He's just not.
I mean, clearly the most damning thing about the case against President Biden was that his own speechwriter has him on tape saying, quote, "I found all the classified stuff downstairs," meaning right. In his own garage in Delaware. And about that, her writes the following. "Mr. Biden's memory was significantly limited both during his recorded interviews with the ghostwriter in 2017 and in his interview with our office in 2023. And his cooperation with our investigation including by reporting to the government that the Afghanistan documents were in his Delaware garage, will likely convince some jurors that he made an innocent mistake, rather than acting willfully, that is, with intent to break the law as the statute requires."
Yeah,
that seems to be like the crux of everything to me. But my question for you about that is, if it was so not willful, then in 2017, wouldn't President Biden then have called his personal attorney in the National Archives if he was being so cooperative?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, that is an overinterpretation of events in Biden's favor. And it conflates two things that are very importantly different and that have been consistently conflated in all of the commentary about this. There's a huge difference between a person's state of mind in the here and now versus the person's state of mind when he did the actions that allegedly violated the law. So, for example, if Biden took a document in 1983 when he was in the Senate and then retained it and knew he had retained it, the fact that he's close to non compos mentos in 2024 is irrelevant to what his state of mind was when he committed the offense. But when you're talking about is he guilty or not guilty of the offenses, what matters is his state of mind at the time he did the acts that he's accused of, not what his state of mind is now. So I thought this was the worst and weakest part of her testimony, because regardless of what you think about how forgetful he's become and that he's, you know, senescent, or however you want to put it, in the here and now, that really doesn't help him with respect to stuff that he might have taken in 2005 and 1997 or 1983 when he was, you know, a very different person, at least, you know, psychologically. He's obviously deteriorated as he's gotten older and as we've all seen. It's really not a defense of him that he, you know, that now he's forgetful. And that's the reason. And I think her is a smart enough guy to know that reasoning just doesn't hold up. So as a result, their fallback keeps being that Biden cooperated with their investigation and Trump didn't. And, you know, to listen to her and listen to the Democrats, you would think that anyone who cooperates doesn't get charged. And like, that's never how it works.
Andy McCarthy, thank you so much for your insight, expertise, and time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. The summer of 1997 brought warm weather and good energy to the University of Kentucky campus. One August night, Holly Dunn and her boyfriend left a fraternity party to walk along the railroad tracks. Little did they know of the serial murderer who lurked in the shadows. This week, Holly Dunn joins me to share her story of the brutal encounter with the railroad killer, ultimately becoming the sole survivor of his attacks. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and foxnewspodcast.com.
This is former Vice President Mike Pence with your Fox News commentary coming up.
It has been a turbulent time for Boeing.
You don't have any words of assurance for customers who are too scared to fly on a Boeing plane?
We believe in our airplanes.
That was Fox Business Network's Hillary Vaughn with CEO Dave Calhoun when he went to Washington to answer questions after the scare in the air in January when a door plug blew off an Alaska Airlines flight, leaving a gaping hole in the plane and passengers fearing the worst. But the jet did land safely. The incident, however, temporarily grounded the whole fleet of Boeing 737 MAX 9s, and inspections found some other issues until the government cleared those jets for takeoff again. Well, now the Department of Justice has opened a criminal inquiry. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says
Boeing should fully cooperate with any entity, NTSB, us, or DOJ, and they should, and we expect them to.
There have been other recent incidents also under scrutiny. A hydraulics issue on a flight last week, the day after a tire fell off a plane right after departure. On top of all that, the FAA reports Boeing failed 33 of 89 audits as it scrutinizes Boeing's manufacturing process. Adding to the intrigue, a former Boeing quality control engineer turned whistleblower was found dead in what's being investigated as a suicide in South Carolina. John Barnett had raised issues of rushed production compromising safety.
It's a giant issue for aviation right now. Remember, these failed audits also reflect on the FAA.
Michael Boyd is president of his own aviation consulting business, Boyd Group International.
So we have to look at what was the system at Boeing and what was the system at the FAA that allowed these things to take place. And that's going to be a big thing to dive into.
So when they're doing these audits, are they looking at the manufacturing process step by step?
I would suspect they're looking at every part of it. I mean, the real red flag here is they can't tell you who really worked on that door plug. You know, at an airline, and this is the same thing, a mechanic doesn't work and there's an inspector. Apparently, we had a whistleblower whose inspectors weren't doing that work. That's severe. And I think it goes to question whether or not Boeing is doing the whole thing right, not just a door plug.
And it's not just Boeing. Obviously, Boeing has suppliers. One of them is Spirit AeroSystems, and it also failed in different quality control audits done by the FAA. Spirit makes the fuselage or the body for that 737 MAX jet. That was the MAX 9 that was involved in the Alaska issue back in January. So Spirit is also dealing with this issue.
Absolutely. I think all of Boeing's main suppliers are going to get dragged into this, and they should. You know, Spirit, keep in mind, you know, up until about 20 years ago, they were Boeing aircraft. Boeing just sold that factory off into an independent company. But they have to be monitored as well. So, again, when these inspections are failed, it's not a minor thing. It reflects, A, on Boeing big time and what Boeing's been doing over the last several years. But it also reflects on FAA oversight. That FAA should have been on top of some of this stuff. They can't sit there and say, oh, we just found it. So again, the good news is when this is settled, Boeing's going to be a whole lot better. The FAA is going to be a whole lot better. And the public's going to be a whole lot safer.
Now, when that issue happened in January, the 737 MAX 9 was grounded for a period of time. There were inspections. There were some other issues found. It's flying again. Do you believe that that aircraft and all other Boeing aircraft in service are safe?
I do. I'll tell you how I monitor that. We do a lot of work with pilot unions. If those pilots at American or Southwest or United get into the cockpit and they say they're going to fly it, I'll get into a coach seat and fly with them.
Okay. Because we had them grounded in 2019 also because of two crashes overseas. But that's not related to any of this, right?
It may be related in the sense that it was a Boeing screw-up that allowed this to happen. That door plug was a Boeing screw-up that allowed this to happen. These failures at the FAA are Boeing screw-ups. So I wouldn't rule out that the causal factors of what happened in 2019 are not involved today.
Of course, when you have such scrutiny, every incident becomes a news story, any issue on a flight. And we had one earlier in the week that LATAM Airlines, I don't know if that's how I say it right, that had a flight going from Australia to New Zealand. It had a strong shake, some sort of a technical issue. The plane drops, people hit their heads and the ceiling and their seats, and they had more than 50 people injured and a dozen people went to the hospital. Is that something that could be Boeing related? You think it's an airline issue? Could it just be an air pocket? What are we talking about?
Well, what we started out here talking about is the manufacturing and production process at Boeing. Now, an airplane's been flying for 10 years and has a problem in the sky. That's not a manufacturing process, probably.
Okay, because apparently the pilot on that flight had said there was equipment failure for a few seconds and the plane dropped for, you know, significantly, I guess 500 feet in that short amount of time. Equipment failure, you sure that doesn't go back to manufacturing, or is it 10 years it's a maintenance issue?
It could be both. There's no question about it. Keep in mind, I think I did some numbers, it was like 150,000 operations of the Boeing 737 MAX before we had those two accidents. So yeah, something could come up. I mean, flaws come up in airplanes years after they're built. So you're entirely accurate in saying maybe that could be part of this too.
Okay. Now that was a Boeing 787 Dreamliner 9, a different Boeing aircraft. The Dreamliners, they haven't had the same scrutiny as the 737 MAX. Am I correct?
Oh, no. They had a lot of scrutiny.
Okay. I'm wrong.
His whistleblower was talking about it. Keep in mind, when they were built, we had a major problems. If you remember, it goes back, it's fuzzy, but it goes back to fasteners not being done right. They had to delay the airplane. There was the issue of battery power. Keep in mind, these airplanes are lighter. There's no hydraulics. Everything's electronic. And if you remember, there was a big issue with battery fires on these airplanes. So again, it's a new airplane, and virtually every new airplane's had some problems like this.
The ripple effect for the airlines themselves, if Boeing's manufacturing is under scrutiny and there's a production delay issue, that is going to affect airlines. We've heard already from Alaska and Southwest, they're not sure about their guidance for the year fiscally. United has even paused some pilot hiring because of this. How much worse could it get for the airlines?
It could get a lot worse. Keep in mind, United, which is a superbly managed entity, they're going to be down about 100 airplanes by the end of the summer from what they had planned. 100 airplanes. That's a lot of flying. That's a lot of money. There's a lot of overhead that was included in that, those plans, and the airplanes won't be there to produce revenue. So it's major there. There's no question about it. It's take a look. We have other issues, though, too. I mean, Spirit Airlines has issues because the engines on those airplanes were, I wouldn't say defective, they need to be modified, and that's hurting them. So all these things hurt an airline, and at the bottom end of it, it hurts the consumer.
You mentioned Spirit Airlines earlier. JetBlue was going to merge with Spirit. Federal judge blocked it. There was concerns about what it would mean to the industry, and now those two have gone their separate ways. They still compete. They're not going to be one airline after all. Good or bad, in your opinion, that that deal is not happening?
Bad for the consumer, because it wasn't a merger. JetBlue was going to buy Spirit, and with Spirit, they got a couple hundred airplanes and a couple hundred pilots immediately where they could expand. The judge was very wrong to say it would do away with one major competitor. To keep in mind, there are two different types of airlines. Spirit is an impulse airline. People see a fare and they go. It would have made JetBlue a much stronger competitor to the big four, Southwest, United, Delta, and American.
All right. We're talking about safety and issues on flights here and flights there. But big picture, just the other day, you did have the Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg say,
American aviation is the safest means of travel in the world.
We had crashes. I remember as a kid, you know, in the 70s and then in the 80s, you know, there were crashes in the news all the time. We haven't had that, knock on wood, in the U.S. much at all.
Yeah, and a lot of that goes to the crews of the airplanes. They're, you know, if it's an American, a U.S. airline, I'll get on it any day of the week, because the people involved in flying it, cabin safety, which we call flight attendants, and people who are fixing it, you know, these are professionals all the way across. So, again, keep in mind, when that flight gets delayed or gets canceled due to a maintenance issue, that's a safety improvement, if you want to call it that. So, and he's right. When you look at numbers, the number of people flying, it's a whole lot safer than getting on Interstate 70 and trying to drive to California.
Yeah, I saw a statistic. The chances of a passenger being killed on a flight anywhere in the world, 1 in 13.4 million. 1968 to 77, the chance was 1 in 350,000. That's a big improvement in safety.
Well, it's huge. Keep in mind, it's global too, because back in the I don't want to get too much into it, but back in the 1970s and 80s, when we had a lot of commuter carriers, some of those were, flying on the edge, if you will. They're gone now.
As Boeing goes through all these issues and audits and scrutiny, what does it mean for a competitor like an Airbus? Does Boeing is Boeing's own future at stake here?
It is. You don't add capacity when a competitor has a short-term problem. But the 737-10 issue and some others, it's going to shove about 300 to 350, maybe more, airplanes off the Boeing book into potentially the Airbus book. Airbus has the ability now. They have 70 acres they can get down in Mobile, Alabama, where they have a factory where they can expand that to another two production lines and basically take those 737-10 orders and convert them to A321 XLR, which is a wonderful airplane. So Airbus is in the catbird seat right now, and they have the ability to expand to this loss of business from Boeing. So Airbus is in a pretty good position right now.
How are they when it comes to safety audits and scrutiny?
Don't know. I haven't seen anything, but we've seen nothing along the lines of what we've seen at Boeing, where we do know we've had bolts not installed, where we do know we had bad, or I'd say questionable engineering when the MAX came out. We don't have any of those indications at all. But keep in mind, they have a U.S. factory down in Mobile, and it has oversight from the FAA, too. And we haven't heard not a thing.
Some people say they're looking, when they're booking a flight, what kind of airplane that flight is, and they may not take one based on what it is. If it's a Boeing plane, they'll try to find another alternative. Is that smart or is it too overreactive?
It's too overreacting. I mean, you want to go back to very ancient history. 60 years ago, there was a Lockheed Electra, a wonderful airplane, but it had some major problems. And again, it was a new airplane, had some crashes. And there was a period there where people call Eastern and say, are you going to put me on an Electra? I won't go. That was long ago. I don't think we'll get to that now. But if we keep having incidents and smoke coming out of Boeing, airlines might start to take the hit.
Michael Boyd, president of Boyd Group International, thanks so much for joining us again.
My pleasure, sir. You have a good day ahead.
And in other news,
I'm Gianna Gelosi. A library in Worcester, Massachusetts has come up with a clever way to pardon people who owe overdue book fees. They're going to scratch those fees in exchange for a picture of that person's cat, or any cat for that matter. They say the goal is to encourage people to read and visit the library, even if they owe money for a lost or damaged book. The executive director of the public library, Jason Homer, told Fox News Digital they want to come to members of the community with kindness and say, just be part of our community. The initiative is called Feline Fee Forgiveness as part of the library's month-long March Meowness event. The library has events scheduled during March Meowness, including crafts and cat toy making, story times, lectures, a movie screening of cats, and even a de-stress cat petting session. Homer says, quote, a librarian is a book lover, a cardigan lover, and a cat lover. For the Fox News Rundown, I'm Gianna Gelosi.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, it's ready, set, go for the 2024 presidential race, and we're looking at the road ahead with a special guest. Joining me to provide his expert analysis on the political sphere is my friend, Fox News chief political analyst and crowd favorite, Britt Hume. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Mike Pence.
What's on your mind?
TikTok is a national security threat to the United States of America. The social media juggernaut is a Chinese Communist Party-controlled program used to surveil more than 150 million Americans, both young and old. TikTok is Chinese spyware that allows the Chinese Communist Party to manipulate the minds of young Americans at will and compromises the privacy of millions of Americans. It is essentially digital fentanyl, a 21st century technological weapon. The app is so potent and addictive that TikTok is banned within China. The version of TikTok approved for use in China is watered down, free of an algorithm set for addiction and focused on educational purposes. Meanwhile, TikTok is the most popular social media for American teenagers, allowing the CCP to sow discord and feed the American people communist propaganda through their phones. Ultimately, the threat which TikTok poses to the security and privacy of Americans must be addressed before it's too late. Fortunately, we're not starting from square one. The Trump-Pence administration took historic action. In 2020, our administration issued an executive order intended to force the Chinese Communist Party to sell TikTok. Unfortunately, the Biden-Harris administration revoked that executive order soon after taking office, as they sought to roll back virtually everything done by our administration, regardless of merit. Just as it ignored Chinese spy balloons flying overhead, the Biden administration has done nothing to address Chinese spy programs on our devices. While Congress pushed Biden to enact legislation banning TikTok on official government devices, that hasn't stopped his campaign from posting away on its own TikTok. Even still, I am grateful that Biden's use of the app hasn't kept him from backing the bill moving through the House of Representatives this week that would force the sale of TikTok. I just wish it hadn't required the upcoming election for him to take the threat seriously. The Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act is carefully crafted. While a TikTok ban would violate the First Amendment, forcing TikTok to divest from the Chinese Communist Party, as this bill is designed to do, is just common sense. Today, every politician likes to talk tough on China. Unfortunately, too many politicians talk a big game, but crack under the pressure of wealthy donors or personal grudges, including my former running mate. When lobbyists for a company controlled by the Chinese Communist Party and turn a former president against his own political legacy, we should all be concerned. The era of appeasing the Chinese Communist Party is over. The Trump-Pence administration was the first to confront the threat posed by TikTok, and I will never falter in my commitment to confronting China at home and abroad. Allowing TikTok to continue operating in the United States while under the control of the Chinese Communist Party is simply unacceptable. We would never let Russia run the nightly news during the Cold War, and we certainly can't let China do the same now. Allowing TikTok to continue to spew Chinese Communist Party sanctioned propaganda, poisoning the minds of American children, is just wrong. Enough is enough. Congress should act this week to pass legislation forcing the sale of TikTok, and President Joe Biden should immediately sign it into law. This is Mike Pence, the 48th Vice President of the United States.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.